and go, baby. Right back into the action for another day of the week. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Before You Bet, airing live right now on the Covers YouTube and Max channels. Great big show planned for you guys today. Great big game in the NBA. Hoping and praying that the Mavs can make this a series. There's been way too many sweeps, five-game series, blowouts in these playoffs. So we're hoping for some drama, some intrigue. So hopefully Dallas can bounce back on their home court tonight. John Mettler and I have five separate bets for that game. And then we have a couple bets for Major League Baseball. Pretty big golf tournament coming up. The U.S. Open, Neil Parker will be by with a trio of picks. Then we're saving something very special for the end of the show. You're going to want to stick around for this. A little bit of sarcasm maybe, but if you want to know what it is, stick around to find out. So if you guys want to participate in the show, it is very easy to do so. Just hit up the live chat on YouTube and on X. Let us know where you're watching from. And let us know what your best bets are for Game 3 of the NBA Finals and if there's anything you like on the board in Major League Baseball or the U.S. Open golf stuff. All right, let's bring in my first guest here, the Magic Ass Man, John Mettler in short sleeves and his Detroit Tigers. Cat Mettler, how you making out?
Good. I'm super pumped for Game 3. I just, like you said, hopefully we get a Mavericks victory, extend this series. Please, like, 6-7, give us something. I just want to see a good series. So also the time between games is way too long in my opinion, but here we go. Game three.
That's one, like the NBA does things so much better in most regards than Major League Baseball, but Major League Baseball with their playoffs in and out, but 2.5 weeks from the start of the playoffs to the end of the World Series. Now I know the nature of baseball is different because they essentially play every day, but come on, man, 2 days off between every game. They had 10 days off between the conference finals, but hey, it is what it is. I've been complaining about this for years. I'm going to stop complaining about that right now because you know why, John? Because it's not going to change. So there's no point in us complaining. Check in on the live chat. Tanner saying, let's go, Joe. Indeed. I'm fired up to have a good show today. David CK, good morning all. Indeed. I hope everyone is having a good hump day. Okay, so some picks to get into, but a couple of themes going into the game here tonight, John. First and foremost, the status of Kristaps Porzingis. Very much up in the air. I'm assuming he's not playing. I think they still have him as questionable, but they haven't come right out to say that he's not playing in the game. Now, of course, he's had a much bigger impact in the series than I thought he was going to. I think you give him pretty much all of the credit for that game one win when he came off the bench here in the first quarter and he couldn't miss. I think he has, 32 points off the bench in the series so far. So big deal, John, if he's out. He's had a big impact in the series so far, but then again, they haven't really needed him to get this far so far. What do you think of Porzingis and his status here tonight?
It's a big deal. It's honestly, one of the series bets we gave out was I bet Porzingis over 15.4 points per game in the series with the assumption his minutes would increase as the series went on. This could be a disaster for me if he comes in tonight because I think it was void if he didn't play in three games. So if he comes in tonight, plays 10 minutes and leaves, I could be in a lot of trouble with that bet. It's not what I was obviously hoping to attack. I don't know the stat off the top of my head. I want to say someone put out, I saw on Twitter yesterday that I think with Porzingis on the floor, they're plus 43, the Celtics. Might be plus 54. I might have that mixed up. And off the floor, they're even. They're plus minus. So, I mean, it's just a basic step. It's not like the end all be all, but obviously he's had very, very impactful minutes. He's had very, very impactful minutes matching up against Derek Lively as well. Like in game one, he essentially created that run in the first quarter where, he had the block shots. He kept making shots, all those things. His rim protection has been fantastic. It does create like a scenario where, the Celtics have done a really good job of leaving like Derek White, Drew Holiday kind of in the dunker spot, which pulls Gafford Lively away from the rim, weakening their rim protection. And you have to leave Gafford Lively on Porzingis because if he does come in the post, that's going to be a problem for you. You can't just put a small guy on him because he's hanging on the perimeter. If they go Al Horford, kind of changes. I feel like the Mavericks could maybe opt for a smaller guy because, I mean, Horford could try to post him up, but that's just not his game. He's not a back-to-the-basket guy, so you can't really punish him for putting someone small which would allow them to leave Lively Gafford near the rim. It creates a lot of moving parts. He's a big part of this series. If he's out, he says he's going to play. It's very confusing messages because he says he's going to play and he'll die on the court type thing. And then Joe Mazzulla's like, it's a very serious injury. And then you have other people saying he's day to day. I'm like, what is it? We don't seem to have a clear, I don't get how it can be an extremely serious injury and then also day to day. So it creates a very tricky situation from a betting standpoint too for these props.
Yeah, maybe the Celtics already know and they're just waiting right up until you know, we're going to hear by the time the show is over, hey, it's going to be a game time decision where the Celtics probably, you know, these teams manipulate these injury reports all the time, right? So who knows? We'll see what happens with him. But another big thing coming into this game has been the scoring struggles of Jason Tatum. You know, in sports, we build these guys up to knock them down, and Jason Tatum's being knocked down, criticized quite a bit here in the playoffs. Very inconsistent scoring in this series so far. He has a 16-point game and an 18-point game. The three-point shooting has been absolutely horrendous. Trouble finishing at the rim, contributing in other areas. I'm going to get to that shortly, but you know, you have some people that want to build Tatum up to be a top five player in the league, where, you know, now people are coming on saying he's not even the best player on the team. So what do you make of the criticism here for Jason Tatum not playing very well in the first two games?
I saw a tweet and someone was like, Jason Tatum's gonna be the first NBA player to win a title and go down in the rankings of all-time players. I was like, I think Jason Kidd was trying to stir the pot there when he said Jaylen Brown's the best player on the Celtics, but Jaylen Brown is on the big stage. He is playing like the best player on the Celtics. I mean, Tatum is giving them he's not forcing it. Like, he had 12 assists. He's been great with the assists and stuff. But at the same time, he was like, I'm not trying to score. Well, I think he had the most field goal attempts on the Celtics last game. So you're not trying to score, but it's not like you're not shooting it. So, I mean, he bricked the one off the backboard. I don't know. It's kind of, he's definitely feeling the pressure, I would say. Yes. I think you've been anointed as the best player on the best team, and everyone else is kind of having really big games around you. Even it wasn't Gilbert Arenas. Someone was making the case that they think Derek White, it was a former NBA player that was making the case, they think Derek White's the most impactful player on the Celtics and stuff, just from both ways. So, there's just so much narrative around the Celtics. I feel like he might be pressing a bit to prove he is the best player type thing. And that's kind of getting in his head a bit. I mean, I don't expect him to keep shooting. Like you said, at the rim, he missed four or five layups that you would fully expect Jason Tatum to make. So, I mean, if those drop, you have 20 plus points, kind of the narrative fades a bit, right? So I don't think he can shoot as he did.
I mean, I'm guilty of this as anyone, but it feels like with sports and sports content, we always have to be negative about something. I mean, look, the Celtics have lost two games in these playoffs as a whole. So, you know, from a team perspective, you can't really criticize them too much, but I do understand, you know, you build them up to knock them down a little bit. It's the same. How many times has LeBron been through something like this? Right. He underperforms just a little bit, and he gets an earful from us jackoffs on social media and here on YouTube. Okay, let's get into the picks here. I have three. John has two. A rare day where I have more NBA picks than Mettler, but a lot to like here. Let's start with the full game total, 213.5 over at FanDuel. I think things align pretty good for a low-scoring game. So let's get into it. Low-scoring games on the road. This is a pattern for the Celtics in the playoffs, an average of just 203.4 points in their road playoff games so far. The first two games of this series saw the teams combine for 196 points in one and 203 in the other. A big reason because of that has been the three-point shooting, which has been absolutely horrific. 32.1% from Boston, that's not good. Absolute garbage from Dallas, though. 24.5% from three-point land for them. You expect that to improve a little bit here, but we haven't seen much evidence of that taking place yet. And big question, who's contributing off the bench for both teams? So Porzingis, I don't think he's going to play here. He might, But he's had a massive impact off the bench here for the Celtics, 32 combined points in each of the games. Meanwhile, Dallas's bench has given them 29 total points in the series so far. They've been outscored by Porzingis. Luka can't do it all himself. He's beat up. Kyrie, Tatum, both underperforming from a scoring perspective. So kind of feels like a lot of needs to click offensively. There's a lot of negatives going on offensively for both teams. A lot does need to click. I don't think it's all going to come together. So I'll take under 213.5 on the full game total. Mettler, you like something for PJ Washington. What are you looking at?
Yeah, I'm going PJ Washington over 1.5 assists, plus 105. Keeps bouncing back and forth, plus 105, even money. I bet at even money when it opened. So I bet this plus 140, actually, last game. He only had one assist. He didn't go over. Nothing to me, like, I didn't hear or see anything that really changes my mind. Even at plus 100, you know, I say this last game before game two. To me, PJ Washington is a 1.5 even money assist guy when he's just standing in the corner as a three-point shooter, and that's kind of what you saw him do in previous series. That is not his role at all in this series. Like, they, one, Jason Kidd said he wants him to be more of a Magic Johnson kind of type player. So immediately you're like, he's going to be on the ball more. Even like Josh Hart in the post game, they asked Josh Hart, you know, what would you do? What adjustment would you make? And he was talking about Kyrie Irving, Luka Doncic are just working way too hard to bring up the ball. They're on the ball the entire time. It would help them out if someone else can like kind of handle the ball handling just a little bit. And he, again, once again, mentioned PJ Washington. You just look at the amount of times PJ Washington in that game was able to put the ball in the deck, drive the lane, and he finished most of the shots, you know, with floaters and stuff like that. You know, it only takes, when you're trading at 1.5, doesn't take very many times where all of a sudden the help steps up and you dump it to Lively and Gafford and they dunk it, right? So the fact that he's showing the ability to do that, and then there's also like this narrative that they need to put him on the ball more. I'm coming right back to this. It doesn't bother me at all that he didn't win this in game two. There was like, not necessarily with PJ Washington, but whoever's doing the scorekeeping for the Celtics, you know, assist, there is like kind of like, it's not like clearly defined what an assist is. They were, in my opinion, a little generous with the Celtics assists and not very generous with the Mavericks, what they were giving both sides. So this moves to home, different scorekeeper in charge. I'm not saying that's why we lost at all. Definitely not with the PJ Washington one. Just there's been a couple like Celtics assists where I'm like, I don't know, not sure. So I like that this is moving home too for PJ Washington. So I'm going PJ Washington over 1.5 assists, even money.
Okay, my big takeaway from that pick, John, is that PJ Washington, just as good as Magic Johnson. I believe that is exactly what you said, so we're going to stick with that. Okay, I'm going to go back to the well on a bet that easily hit for me in game two. It's the Jason Tatum over on assist and rebounds. They bumped it up by one. It was 14.5 going into game two, 15.5 going into game three, and I still like it because he continues to cruise over this number. He's had at least 16 in 8 of his last 9 games. These two games in this series, an average of 18.5. So he is dominating in these areas in the series so far. He's averaging 27 potential assists and rebounds per game. And here's the thing. We kind of talked about this off the top. He might be content with taking on a reduced scoring role and looking to contribute elsewhere, because he is having a lot of success in these two areas here in the playoffs and in this series so far. And I talked about this going into game two. Now, Tatum was very weird. He went out of his way coming into the series saying there's so much more than just scoring in basketball. When's the last time a big-time NBA player said that? It's true, but I do think he said that to kind of take some of the pressure off of himself, and it does appear as if he's feeling that pressure when he has the ball in his hands, just 18 and 16 points in the opening two games of the series here. So yeah, I think he'll continue to dominate in those two areas. Who knows about the scoring? I don't trust it, but yeah, I think we'll see him driving and kicking a lot here tonight. Mettler, we have two separate picks for Daniel Gafford. We might as well combine them, but we're not doing that. What do you have for him? Then I'll break down mine.
So I'm going Daniel Gafford over half assists. We just need one assist, minus 120. You know, I saw this before game two was like minus 135. I was looking at it, I was thinking about it from like a math side of things. That was a good price for game two. Unfortunately, he goes under. He doesn't have an assist. But I just didn't bet in game two because I didn't really see like the basketball side of things that were like I felt like it was a good from the basketball, like the basketball strategy of like what you see is happening in the games. It's kind of been murky waters with this series too, with like Gafford, Lively, you know, Maxi Kleber, like where the minutes going to go. After watching game two, I feel much more confident in betting this for Daniel Gafford over half assists. Also, it drops down from -135 to -120 because he went under. You know, they're not putting Porzingis and Horford on Gafford. They're putting Jason Tatum. And that way, when they come up for the screen, Luka Doncic can't go one-on-one against Porzingis or Horford. So the Mavericks made a counter to that game two, second half. They're like, fine, you're going to leave Jason Tatum on Gafford. We're going to dump the ball into the post. And he scored multiple times, and he just backed down Jason Tatum. I think that's where you might see the minutes shift from Lively to Gafford, because I don't think Lively has that in his game yet. He's more just a lob threat energy guy, where Gafford actually was backing him down and laying in near the rim. So I think that's where, if they're going to keep guarding with Jason Tatum, they're going to dump the ball into the post. If you're dumping the ball into the post, they should, you know, after watching the Celtics watching that film, they should send help, because obviously Jason Tatum can't guard him one-on-one. It's a huge size mismatch. They're doing it for other reasons. So if they send help, you only need half assist. So one pass, it should open up more opportunities for a potential assist. So -120, I'm going over for Gafford.
Yeah. Xavier Sanchez in live chat says, how are we feeling about Lively going over 13.5 points and rebounds with Porzingis out? Now, he's not officially out, but I think he's going to be. I don't like Lively to go over that number, because I'll echo some of what John said, because I like Gafford to go over his points and rebounds number here tonight. The number is at 14.5. I do like him to go over this. Gafford is a guy who is making the most of his minutes out there. He's topped this number in 11 of his last 14 games here in these playoffs, and I think they should be going to him more after he found some scoring success in game two, and he's consistently shooting at a high number here. So he's coming off a game where we saw them throw it to him in the post a couple times, and he benefited from that, scored 13 points on 6-9 shooting. Very efficient stuff from him. Very close to the rim is where he does most of his scoring. He shot at 75% versus T-Wolves, 75% in two games in this series so far. And yeah, it's not quite a fade on Lively here, but I do think he's been pretty sloppy in the first two games of this series. So I think there's potential for Gafford to eat into some of his minutes potentially. Lively at -15 in two games, Gafford at -5. That's still not good, but still much better. Lively, two turnovers in each game. We saw him get into real foul trouble in game one. He had 5 fouls with some really unnecessary ones there as well. And Dallas, listen, hey, they need to make some adjustments here. Maybe one of the adjustments is feeding the ball more to Gafford and getting him some additional time on the court here as well. Checking in on the live chat, Greg says, as much as we don't like it, C's hanging the banner. Yeah, it's looking like that, isn't it? Action Sports Central seems like a Jaylen Brown game versus a Tatum game. I don't know what he quite means by that, but yeah, we see it how they're kind of playing the guys off of each other. I think maybe that's what he means by that. Xavier says, I love it. Thank you, fellas. I see your point. And Big Brown, these lives are great. Thanks, fellas. Yeah, we love doing the show. Probably going 5 days a week during football season too. Pretty pumped up for that. Okay, John. That's it for the NBA section, but John's going to hang out in the back here for a little bit because he's saving something very special for us. We're going to get to that in 5 or 6 minutes. Baseball coming up now, and then U.S. Open Golf, and then Mettler will be back. John, we'll see you in 5 or 6 minutes here.
All right, we'll see you in a bit.
All right, let's get into some Major League Baseball. Just two picks today here. Not a whole lot stood out to me, but hopefully two winners. Let's get into it. Phillies in Boston taking on the Red Sox. Christopher Sanchez on the mound here for the Phillies. We're going to back him tonight by taking over 16.5 outs, -114. Played that one over at FanDuel. So he's on a great stretch where he has topped this number in 5 of his last 6 starts. He's in incredible form with a 1.95 ERA during these 6 games. He is a left-handed pitcher. Boston really struggling versus left-handers right now, especially at home, where they have a 542 OPS over the last month. Expect a lot of strikeouts and a lot of soft contact in this one. Sanchez is allowing a very high percentage of soft contact lately. Boston has the highest strikeout percentage versus left-handed pitching over the last month of the season, and they're also struggling to generate hard contact. So I think Sanchez sets up for success tonight in beautiful Boston, Massachusetts. And here's another one. The juice is worth the squeeze on this one. Jonathan Cannon, you know this guy? Not exactly a household name. Who is on the White Sox these days? But we're going to look to fade this guy. Under 15 and a half outs recorded, minus 160. So check him out. He's bounced between the majors and the minors this season, making 12 total appearances, and he's gone 1-11 against this number in the majors and minors combined here in 2024. He has an ERA close to 6 in the majors and a 5.50 ERA in the minors, so he's not very good. A high pitch count has been a major problem for him at the major league level. He's averaging 19 and a half pitches per inning here in the big leagues. He's taking on the Mariners. They're heating up at the plate right now. Top 7 in WRC plus and hard contact percentage versus righties over the last week. So they might be on to something. So just two total picks there for Major League Baseball. We had a vote in the live chat. 77% of the YouTube chat thinks the Mavs will win game 3. Now, word of caution here, because we've been doing these polls throughout the series and it's been heavily slanted towards the Mavs the previous two games, and it hasn't worked out very well, but you know, let's make this a series here, guys. Okay, on to golf. Big major teeing off here tomorrow, the U.S. Open at Pinehurst in North Carolina. Let's bring in our golf expert, Neil Parker, looking sharp with his covers hats. Neil, how would you rank the majors? You got the Masters at number one?
Yeah, but I'm super fired up for this U.S. Open. I don't know why. I feel like maybe it's just because I want to see a bunch of tour players play like 12 handicaps. Par's a really, really good score. And only three players broke par last time we were here in 2014. So I don't know. Maybe it's just the change of scene where we've seen a lot of the major championships expected to play difficult, and then that hasn't actually happened. So for some reason, I'm just a little more fired up this week.
Okay, yeah, let's get into it here. A lot of people excited for this one. Neil has two top 30s, one top 40. Let's start with Matt Fitzpatrick. You like him to have a top 30 finish. Tell us why.
Yeah, well, the U.S. Open is his best major championship. He obviously won in 2022. He had a T17 last year, and he also has a pair of T12s on his resume. In the 2014 U.S. Open, he was also the low amateur T43. So Fitzpatrick's game is perfectly suited to take on the challenges at Pinehurst. He is coming off a strong T5 finish at the Memorial, where he was fifth in true strokes gained putting. That's one of his greatest strengths, obviously. So he finished second in true strokes gained putting at both the Players' Championship and the Masters, where he finished solo fifth and T22. But his tee to green game is also on the rise as well. He's gained true strokes across the board through his past 7 tournaments. He's also better than field average in driving accuracy and driving distance during that stretch. So just really like Matty Fitzpatrick to have just another really good, solid U.S. Open. And so if I were going to rank them, Joe, I'd go Masters, U.S. Open, Open Championship, just because I can't stay awake or get up early enough to watch it as easily. And then finally, the PGA Championship, which is typically ranked as the fourth. Do you know what? I might even like the Players' Championship better than the PGA Championship. So the unofficial fifth major. There you go.
Hot take from Neil. Okay, moving on, another top 30. Plus money once again, Max Homa. Plus 110 over at Bet365. Why do you like him to finish in the top 30 here?
Well, Max Homa sort of had this narrative hanging around that he wasn't a major championship competitor, but he's kind of silenced that doubt the last 3 times out. He was T10 at the Open Championship last summer, obviously T3 at the Masters, and a respectable T35 at the PGA Championship in May. But he's the 10th ranked golfer in the world, in the official world golf rankings. We know those are somewhat flawed. I get it, but Data Golf Rankings, he's 18th as well. So we're talking about a world-class player. He won this fall on the DP World Tour. He has 16 top 25 finishes and played the weekend in 21 of his past 23 events. Well-rounded, solid player, plus money, top 30. Very happy to take the swing with Homa. I think he's just a little priced because in the past he hasn't played well at this major championship. But again, I think that he is starting to be a major championship contender.
Some lovely plants behind you, by the
way. I like the green. Yeah, yeah, I like the green.
I like it. We're all about nature around here at Before You Bet. Big environment, guys, especially producer Mick. Okay, last but not least, a little bit more, I don't know, meat on the bone with this one, up to plus 145. Billy Horschel, you like him to have a decent showing and finish in the top 40. Why is that?
Yeah, Horschel, similar, in great form. He has three consecutive top 25 finishes, including the T8 at the PGA Championship, finished T15 last week at the Memorial. He's second in true strokes gained putting in this field across that three tournament stretch, while also gaining true strokes across the board. Like I mentioned, pars are at a premium this week at Pinehurst. He's 11th in bogey avoidance and 13th in scrambling percentage on tour this season. So I definitely value that. And ultimately, I'm just anticipating him to strategically navigate his way tee to green while also continuing to putt well. And it doesn't hurt that Billy Horschel finished T23 here at Pinehurst in the 2014 U.S. Open. He's one of my favorite golfers. I love Billy Horschel, and I hope he has a great week. Obviously, there's really long numbers for Horschel, Homa, Fitzpatrick, and another player I like is Harris English in the outright market. So definitely players I sprinkled on, as well as pre-tournament bets on Colin Morikawa and Justin Thomas. No one has seen more steam than Colin Morikawa coming into this this major. So I don't recommend betting him at his current odds unless you can get like a profit boost or something, or, you know, maybe, I know Bet365 does have that option. Yeah, so just a couple more players to keep in mind. Those are the six guys I like this week.
There we go. Okay, yeah, should be a great tournament here teeing tomorrow. Okay, Neil, we'll leave it at that. Thanks a lot for joining. Best of luck with those bets. Hopefully we'll be celebrating a couple winners when you're on with us next Wednesday. We'll see you then.
Thanks a lot, Joe, man. Talk soon.
Yes, sir. The man making a real name for himself in the world of golf betting. Okay, so we teased it off the top, and hopefully this doesn't disappoint anybody. John Mettler insisted on doing this in our pre-show meeting. The big LPGA tournament taking place in Grand Rapids. John's going to have boots on the ground. This is teeing off tomorrow. And John, you have a couple bets for us. Break these down for us.
Yeah, I think I'd go Masters, US Open, Meyer LPGA Classic. So this is the one I'll be at all weekend. I go every Father's Day with my dad. My dad's a huge LPGA fan. He loves to bet on the LPGA. So I have two top 10s. I have Nelly Korda minus 140, Brooke Henderson plus 240. Both of these girls have won this tournament in the past. It kind of feels chalky, right? Like, these are big names. It feels like there probably wouldn't be much value. This course plays to the best players in the field. It's a bombers course. There's five par fives, which is not normal. So it really helps, you know, the best players kind of separate from the field. In terms of Nelly Korda, it also came down to pricing. I wasn't going to share this unless Bet365 still have these prices available, which they do right now. Nelly Korda is minus 140 for a top, minus 140 for a top 10 at Bet365. She's about minus 230 everywhere else. That's a huge gap. And then Brooke Henderson's trading about plus 180. She's won this tournament twice. I think she just missed top 10 last year or whatever, but her putting is drastically improved this year. And that was really what was holding her back. It's in terms of like ball striking, this course plays perfectly into these types of players. That's pretty much all I have for you. You could also maybe, we've had great success betting on this tournament, me and my dad. So last year we had Leona Maguire. We actually pre-flopped her and she won 20-1. And then 3 years ago, we had Brooke Henderson 30-1 on the pre-flop too. And she won as well. So I've walked this course for 5 years or whatever. I'm not just throwing random darts here. It does play to a certain type of player. And I think these prices are great for these players. So I'll be there. I'll be tweeting. They're in the same group tomorrow, 1 o'clock. They're teeing off. I'll be there. The first two walk them all around.
So what is the atmosphere like at this tournament? You know, you hear quite a bit of contrast from, the waste management is a complete and total shit show. Whereas a lot of other golf tournaments will be a lot more sophisticated. So where does it land between the shit show and sophisticated crowd in terms of attending a golf event?
I would 1,000. I mean, it's why I keep going back in terms of like just general pricing. One, parking's free. Week pass, $25, and beers are like $2, and like a burger is $2. You can't, yeah, it's honestly cheaper to like, we go to the tournament and we're like, let's eat while we're there because it's cheaper. Meyer does a great job of sponsoring this event, and they have a really good, like the gate and like who the amount of people in there, it'll be like a lot more people than you think it is. It's a great environment. You can get super close to watch these shots and stuff. It's awesome. It's why every Father's Day we go back. So
$2 to get outside in mid-June when it's hot, but not too hot. That sounds like a great time. I don't care what's going on. You know, it could be a bunch of losers playing Frisbee and I'd go out if it was $2 beers, right? That's a pretty good deal.
It's not even like your Coors Light, Miller Light. It's like a craft beer. It's like, I think it's maybe $2 or $3 for a craft beer. Yeah. It's, like you honestly can't beat it. And I'll say what I always say, a -140 on the LPGA pays the exact same as a -140 in the NFL. So whether we win
100%. Be careful with those craft beers, John. You can get pretty fucked up drinking craft beer in the sun all day. So if you're calling in sick here on Friday's show,
I'll be your friend.
We're going to know exactly why. Okay. Maybe a little sluggish. So we will see. Okay, that does it for today's show, guys. There's a lot to cover on the show between game three of the NBA Finals, a couple golf tournaments, and Major League Baseball. Thank you to all of our guests for joining. Thank you, everyone, chiming in the live chat. Best of luck with your bets, and we'll catch you guys again on Friday. Woo!